Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
I look up Empire State Building, lit up, glowing, blinking, twinkling in blue and orange.
Thought we don't mess with them no more.
And that's what I thought. And then I checked just to make sure. And the official Empire State Building Twitter said it was for the Knicks. And I felt like it was fair to say, okay, all's forgiven. Should I have? Was I too easy to forgive?
Too quick? You're too easy. You're too easy with it.
I mean, it was nice to see, though. Because, like, when you walk out of the Garden on 7th Avenue, you look up and you look down 32nd Street, you look straight up, you see Empire State Building's right there. You're, like, in the shadow of it. Because it's only a couple of – it's, like, one or two blocks down from where we are. So it's – you can't miss it. And to see the blue and orange just up in the sky was – it was nice. So I made it too easy. I was –
yeah,
because
they front running.
They definitely are front running. You're not wrong about that.
You know what I'm saying? Right. They on with whatever is a popular thing. We need them to put that on no matter what.
So here's what we'll do. It's hour number two. It's Bart and Han. We're already flying through this show. 800-919-3776. So many people want to talk about the Knicks. We have your call stacked, racked, ready to go. We're going to get to you now. We're going to let everybody have their opportunity to get it off their chest. And then we've got some other news to get to because, as we mentioned, this was a big weekend heading into a big week. So we still have Rangers tonight at the Garden. You have Billy Joel, by the way, Tuesday night at the Garden. You've got a draft in the NFL coming up on Thursday and some news on Aaron Rodgers over the weekend, as predicted. That is something we have to dive into as well. So let's let the Knicks fans get their say. We'll get back to the Knicks in the power hour, of course. So let's go to Scott in Manhattan. What's up, Scott?
Hey, what's up, man? Yeah, listen, man. That word I'm using is explosive, but you know, you said when you were in the hood and you say that somebody is the S with the beginning and the T at the end, yeah, listen, so, you know, that's the way the Knicks are right now. And I have to say, look, these guys are locked in. You look at their faces, you know, saying when they're on the court, you see everybody's eyes, not a lot of celebrating, everybody's locked in. And getting back to Randall, even Mark Jackson said it. When he's on the sideline, you didn't see him pouting. He was clapping. Mm-hmm. He was giving the guys, saying kudos for coming in. Listen, so, big ups for him for that because, I mean, he showed a little leadership back then. And I didn't think he had to speak. I mean, even though it would have been nice if he said something, but it's not a big deal, you know. And I just love the response, man, and we're going forward.
I hear you. I hear you, Scott. I think, you know, Randall obviously will probably talk. I don't know if they have 2 days off between. Probably won't practice today. But Tuesday before heading to Cleveland, I imagine he's going to say something. Mark in Syosset. Mark.
Guys, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I called Friday. And, yeah, for me, I asked the question, what did I need to see to feel confident in the Knicks that we were going to win? Not only going to win the series, but make a run. And RJ was the key, hands down. And I think he did it, man. He came out and he did the most important thing he could do. He showed that he has the dog in him, and that was the biggest question mark. Not could he drop 30, could he find his J, but could he win games for us? He did it this weekend, came out in attack mode, and made one of the biggest statements I can remember any Knicks player making in decades. Now we got to win and close it out, and he becomes a gladiator. Second point, I love your 20 Billups analogy. Love it. I was actually just talking about it this weekend, and I want to put this out there. I'm pretty confident that we're the best defensive team in the NBA right now. And when you go back and you look at teams that have won an NBA championship without a superstar, without a LeBron, without a Giannis, a Kobe, a Shaq, the last team to do that was the Detroit Pistons. Hands down, the best defensive team in the league that year. We have a vibe. We can make anything happen right now. We're playing together as a team. And when you play defense like this, when you've got guys constantly next man up, we can make a run and something special is happening in New York.
Appreciate it, Mark. I mean, again, Bart brought up the Chauncey Billups comparison. I think there's something to it a little bit when you talk about a Mr. Big Shot kind of guy, a confident guy who's really come into his own when he went to Detroit, just like Jalen Brunson has done here with the Knicks. That's all on the same level. And then the other part of it is depth, defense, rebounding. When you don't have superstars, you have really good players, but no, like, again, LeBron, that kind of player. It's all those things can help you become a very tough out in the postseason, and it all seems to be coming together for the Knicks. Freddie in Brooklyn. Freddie.
Hi, Alan. How are you guys doing?
All right, Fred. Good.
I was calling to get some clarification from Alan about what really transpired with Randall last night. Because during the game, as you said, Mark Jackson was complimenting him and how he was cheering the team during the timeout. Mm-hmm. But then this morning I was hearing he refused to speak to the media after the game. My opinion is that I think he owed the team an obligation to speak after the game to show them that there was no grudge. By him electing not to speak, he left it open for interpretation for anybody to take it any which way they want to. That's one point. My second point is, in view of the way Josh Hart has been locking down on Donovan Mitchell, even if Quinton Grimes is available for the next game, what do you think about Tibbs starting Josh Hart in place of Donovan Mitchell, in place of Quinton Grimes, to keep the clamps on Donovan Mitchell?
Well, it was a smart move. Guys. Yeah, that part of it, Freddie, was a smart move because, you know, Hart's defense on Donovan Mitchell after game one. Now, game one, Donovan Mitchell played great. But after that, ESPN has their numbers they put together, and his defense on Donovan Mitchell has been excellent. He has pretty much locked him up. Donovan Mitchell after game one. So in game one against when Hart was the primary defender, Mitchell was 6 for 11. So that's really good. Remember, he went for, what did he go for, 38?
Yeah, 38 first game.
So since game one, with Hart as the primary defender, he's 6 for 22. I mean, he just, like, think about it. So Hart has done a really good job on him. So with Quinton Grimes
he's
hurt
strong,
with the
physical,
shoulder
he's
issue.
He's a little taller than Grimes, right?
He's also, yeah, they got the scouting report. He's smart. Yeah, all those things. They've made it difficult for Donovan Mitchell. They have had him off balance. By the way, speaking of Randall, Donovan Mitchell had a breakaway dunk. Did you see what Randall did to it? He smashed it. Like, Donovan Mitchell normally – we've seen him have highlight film dunks.
Yeah,
like
he's
ridiculous
only, he's only
dunks.
Like, he's only like 6 feet, though, 6'2".
But it doesn't matter. Like, we've seen him dunk on people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, like, the fact that he smashed it, that's pretty damn good.
Hey, your defense is always – listen, offense might not be running. Defense about effort and being put on the string. So, I mean, that's all that – you know, that just shows you, you know, that he's engaged, too. For everybody that think that he's not engaged, man. Like, listen, you got to give him the benefit of the doubt, man. He's injured.
I think that's a big part of it. That part, but also I just think this is not, like, not – a series isn't great for everyone. Some series, other players, it's like, this is your time. Like, this is a better matchup for you, and so someone else has to take the back seat. That happens from – like, the next series could be Julius Randle dominates the series because it's a better matchup. Like, it just depends on who you're playing. George in Roxbury. George.
Hey, listen, guys. I'm looking at the fact that everybody's focus is on the team. Now, you got to understand, being 74 years old, I've been there from the beginning.
Moses?
I've seen the championship. Say what? What do you say, Bart?
Not as much. I
He's
Moses
just messing with you, George. Message. Just go ahead.
Hey, Bart, I met you in the parking lot with our kids in the school.
Come on, man. I don't want you to come up to me and call me no jive turkey, man. No fish eye fool. I don't want you to come.
No. I was trying to get you to go skiing. But nonetheless, I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, I'm focusing in on Robinson. Every time he's going up against three guys. But the thing that caught my attention was one of the announcers said, oh, what Robinson did against the kid. And I'm saying, kid, how old is Robinson?
Yeah, exactly.
He's playing strong. He's playing the big man's game, you know, like he's an old school player. Hence, listen, everybody, this is a team sport. And to your point, Bart, to that block, to the stuff, Allen, when he blocked Mitchell, he could have strained himself even more so, because that took a tremendous effort to do that.
Yeah.
So, guys, listen, beautiful team. Let's get it done. Yeah, let's not come back. Let's get it done.
Yeah, yeah. No need to play Friday. Right. Thank you, George. No need to play Friday. Now, let's point this out, too. Mitchell Robinson is 24 years old. Right? He just turned 24 in April.
He just looked old.
Evan Mobley is going to turn 22 in a month. Like, they're not. There's not a huge age difference. Experience.
Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, it's one kid versus another. Let's be honest if you're talking about it in NBA terms. Dante in Queens. Dante.
Hey, Hey, guys.
What's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to chime in about Randle, like, no hate or nothing, but just, like, far as from the coaching aspect, I think this is what they should do with him to help break him out of his slump. If you notice, he's always so fixated on his first points being that three. And I feel like when you're struggling, a guy like Randle, built 6'9", you know, muscular physique, get him on the block. Hit a couple fadeaways, face up, get some bully ball going. I think that would make more sense than being, like, so focused on, like, your first 5-6 shots having to be the three, you know?
Yeah, Dante, while I understand that, Dante, I do have to tell you that this whole season – has been Julius Randle's best starts are usually he makes one or two threes to start the game. Now the defense has to worry about that. And then now he's got you. That's just how he's done. It's been his formula, and it's led him to 25-10-4 as an average. He's going to be all NBA. So that's just how he does it. Now, again, before he, in the third quarter, he had been struggling. He made a couple of shots in the third. One of them was a really nice post-up move with a fadeaway over Mobley. So, you know, he was trying to find his game. But, you know, look, like I said, I think some series are better matchups for others. This wasn't a good one because of the length, and he's coming off of the ankle, the conditioning, all that stuff. But one thing I can tell you is this. Now, just to put a bow on the why didn't he talk after the game thing, because I was checking with some people with the team. The team didn't make him available. Okay, it wasn't that he didn't refuse to talk. He didn't leave without talking, although semantically, yes, I guess you could say that. He didn't leave in a huff. He wasn't angry. In fact, one person with the team told me he was actually in a great mood. The team didn't make him available because they didn't want the distraction of him having to talk about not playing in the fourth quarter when they won the damn game. All right, it's kind of the same thing like Derrick Rose. Remember what Derrick Rose at the end of he got into game three, and Derrick Rose got an ovation, and it was fun to see Derrick Rose come into the game.
Throw some bricks, man. Like, this,
you're right about that. But it's the same thing that Derrick Rose wasn't made available after that game, despite the fact that some people were like, oh, let's get Derrick Rose on the podium. Why? They had nothing to do with the game. So the Knicks are – this is a – Tom Thibodeau is big on, yes, there's going to be a lot of great energy around the team. But internally, we got to keep this thing, like, protected. Put it in a cocoon. Don't get caught up in saying crazy stuff. You know, that's why you heard Brunson say, we haven't done anything yet. Right? That's all important. But the Randle situation was not Julius Randle storming out of the arena because he didn't play in the fourth quarter. That not at all is accurate. It is Julius Randle was not made available by the team, therefore was told he could leave. And he left when he was dressed and showered and everything else. But when he left... And I was in the garage after the game, so you see a lot of the family in there. He didn't look miserable to me. So let's not get crazy with him not talking after the game. As I said, I expect him to talk when they practice again, and then he'll be able to say the things that Bart, you said, you know, that you thought it was important for him to say. All right, 800-919-3776 is the number. We'll continue with your calls. We certainly want to continue that kind of energy with you guys. We want to give you all that opportunity to do all that stuff. But right now, Bart, I think we need to, like, flip the script a little bit here because this is draft week. And I want to get into something that also happened over the weekend that you and I talked about Friday when we were doing our can't wait and all this stuff we're looking forward to. There was one more piece of thing that I said, you know what? You're going to have all this stuff at the Garden, and then we're going to have the Aaron Rodgers news. Well, over the weekend, some news seemed to shake loose. NFL Network reporting that the Packers and Jets had recently re-engaged on Aaron Rodgers' talks. And Ian Rappaport saying a deal's not imminent, but the two sides are at least talking with the hopes that a deal can finally get done this coming week.
What I tell you all the time.
We're not surprised.
Timelines breed activity. And there was no need to talk. They can posture all they want, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure they was talking to other people about other things, compensation. And now it's real, right? Now Green Bay is like, hey, man, A lot of people falling. Listen, it's already right now. We got C.J. Stroud like getting picked in the third round, damn near. Like he was supposed to be the first pick.
Yeah, that
like,
whole story is ridiculous.
Yeah, we've seen this happen before. Right now, we got Will Levis going before C.J. Stroud. What are we doing? What are we talking? What are we talking about?
The week before the draft is always idiot season.
Yeah, it's like
always when we all just get so tired of the mocks that we just start making up stuff.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? C.J. Stroud might go one. And then it'd be crazy. Texans would be crazy to not take
Bryce Young.
Mm-hmm. Like, but, you know, you got a defensive coach. And, listen, they have done stupid stuff before. Now,
right. Let's just stay on the topic of Aaron Rodgers and the Jets.
Yeah, I mean, I think it gets done because Green Bay wants to have that opportunity. And I think it starts now. And it could go all the way into Thursday. Right, but the Jets would love to be able to announce that basically with their draft pick, their second round draft pick this year, they draft Aaron Rodgers. That's basically what they're saying. We're using our draft pick to draft Aaron Rodgers.
So you think Friday it could still wait till Friday, right before the second round begins, then the trade is announced and one of those picks ends up going to Green Bay, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, Rob Domofsky, who's been covering the Packers forever, he covers for us. So he and Rich Cimini, who's our Jets reporter at ESPN. They put together a little back-and-forth Q&A thing on ESPN.com, and Domofsky said that from a Packers perspective, it doesn't have to be before the draft starts because Brian Gutekunst has gone on the record saying that he's not asking for the 13th overall pick.
Right.
But they do want to do a deal. They
want 42 or 43, for sure.
He said, though, that he wouldn't do a deal without second-day picks. So the scenario is that the trade could go down before the second round begins on Friday with those number 42 or 43 picks, and that their second round pick is actually at number 45. So what if they make a deal for 42 and package 42 and 45 and use that to get into the first round, which is something, Bart, you said weeks ago that you can envision happening. Now, Cimini said that he thinks that it would be that high drama all the way to pick number 42, but it doesn't seem like they'll wait that long.
Yeah,
because it's too big of a deal to wait to the last minute.
Okay, so if you then I take that back then, because I'm going to say then they will probably want to get the deal done before the first round because they want to move up in the first round again. If they want to move up in the first round again,
right?
Then they need that pick because they need to talk to the team in which they're trying to move up with.
Yeah, you got all that going on, plus also working Rodgers' guaranteed contract. The Jets have to work on the structure of that. And so what are they haggling over? They both, Domofsky and Cimini, have both said it's what we've been saying all along. They're haggling over protection, that the Jets want something on the back end that just in case Aaron Rodgers decides I'm going one and done. I'm going to play for a year, and now I'm going to retire. And they don't want to have another Brett Favre situation. Simple as that. And Domofsky's saying the Packers, as I've been saying, the Packers are saying, you know, it's you bought it, you drive it off the lot, you own it, and that's it. You assume all risk after this, and we shouldn't have to compensate you for it. That's how they feel. I have a feeling that that's what the Jets are going to have to get off of to make this deal happen, and I wonder if it's a matter of they could do it today. Well, you know what? Don't worry about it. Right? Like, they want that first-round pick in 2024. The Jets don't want it to be a first-round pick in 2024 if Rodgers isn't going to play for them in 2024. But, Bart, that 2024 pick's not going to be that high if everything goes well. I feel like it's asking too much, but I understand why you would wait it out.
Well, the Jets are saying, well, hell, if he only plays 1 year, Zach Wilson may not be ready, and we might need that first-round draft pick to try and move up to get us a damn new quarterback, like they did when Brett Favre left. They moved up with the Sanchez pick to move up to go get him. And next year, what do we know about next year's draft? A lot of good quarterbacks coming out.
Yeah, and you're going to have a quarterback who's 40, who said when he came out of his darkness retreat that he was, like, ready to retire and then changed his mind. So there is that there certainly is that concern, and I completely understand it. But
You know what this sounds like?
What?
This sounds like a basketball deal when they talk about a protected pick.
Yeah. Yeah, you know right. Lottery protections.
Yeah.
Should it be top 10 or should it be completely top 14? Like, how do you want to do it? Yeah, I think that's right.
Because they want protection if Aaron Rodgers leaves, because they saying we're going to need that first-round draft pick. How the hell are we going to be with Zach Wilson, no quarterbacks in free agency? How the hell – that means we got to go with Zach Wilson the next year guaranteed, when we hope that Zach Wilson has 2 years to grow and mature and learn the system, not one. We're not ready to go from Aaron Rodgers to Zach Wilson. We much rather say, okay, if that's the case, we'll use that first-round draft pick, we'll send a player, we'll do whatever we got to do to be able to be in striking distance for one of those three quarterbacks that people think are going to be highly touted next year coming up.
Good point. Look, again, we're going to stay on this. That's why you keep it right here on 98.7 ESPN. At any moment, this could go down because it is draft week now. It is official. The sides are talking. We do have those reports. And now it's just a matter of time when Aaron Rodgers becomes a Jet. But the expectation is it'll be sometime this week. Will they wait all the way to Friday, or could it happen before we hear those very first tones of the NFL draft on Thursday night?
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
But right now, Bart, it's time for us to step aside and let the headline makers do the talking in the segment we like to call
Audio Files.
The Audio File.
We begin with, again, a big weekend at the Garden. Knicks win Friday night. The Rangers and Devils play Saturday night. In fact, Billy Joel was scheduled to play Saturday night. Had to postpone or delay his concert. Although, alas, Bart, he did not go on the Zamboni like we were hoping.
Come on, man. He can still go tonight.
Yeah, we didn't see that. That would have been fun, but he did not. But still, so Saturday night instead of Billy Joel, who played Tuesday night instead, we saw the Devils. They put in a rookie goalie, and he played well. And the game was a tight one. It was 1-1. The Devils end up winning in overtime. This shot by Dougie Hamilton was an absolute laser. Like, what a shot that he had in overtime. But you could feel it when Artemi Panarin had two great chances and he missed the net on both of them. You just had that feeling like, uh-oh, and it goes to overtime. You just had that feeling the Devils were going to take this game. So afterwards, of course, a lot of disappointment and frustration for a Ranger team that had dominated the first two games of the series. Now it's 2-1 going into tonight's game four. With the Rangers at the opportunity to go up 3-1, but the Devils can even this thing up going home. Gerard Gallant, head coach of the Rangers, still felt like his team played well.
Again, I thought it was an excellent hockey game. We weren't as smooth, as crisp. I thought we passed up some scoring chances, especially the first half of the game. We're trying to make passes. But overall, I thought we played a real good game.
I mean, missed some opportunities, yes. But for the Rangers, the power play wasn't as dominant. The Devils played a lot harder, a tightly contesting game. Did the Rangers play too much defense, too much careful instead of that go, go, go? They tend to do that at home. It's strange. You talk about the guard and how it works against you, right? The Rangers at home are a different team for some reason than they are on the road. It's amazing. So let's see if they can open it up again in this game tonight. A big one for sure.
And it was important for them to be in a tight game, right? Because they've been all blowouts.
Test them.
Now they understand that, hey, it's like a test. Like, we got to tighten up when it's a close game. We got to play a certain way. We can't play tight, but we got to execute at a high level.
Yeah, and it's something, again, tonight, a big one, because you just the last thing you want to do is have this thing even. Now the Devils, that young team, starts getting a little more confident. So we shall see tonight, a big one tonight at the Garden. We have full coverage on 98.7 ESPN. The Brooklyn Nets were the first of the New York teams. Remember, five of them are in the playoffs from the winter sports for the first time in forever. And the Brooklyn Nets are the first ones out. They got swept. They lost Saturday, 96-88, in Game 4 at home to the Sixers, who were playing without Joel Embiid, who, by the way, he might be out for a bit. Apparently, the knee is not good. Yeah,
between knees and backs, yeah. Because the Bucks, like, I expect those guys to come back. I'm just so used to Giannis saying, all right, whatever, I'm Wakanda, I'll come back from the knee, but maybe a back is a whole other animal that we forget about.
And they play tonight, too. This is the Bucks and the Heat are tonight. That's a Game 4 where the Heat just smoked him in Game 3, and no one really saw that coming. Anyways, back to the Nets, so the season is over for them. Here's Jacques Vaughn on what he said to the team afterwards.
Yeah, I told them they should feel extremely proud when they walk around the borough of Brooklyn. We didn't make excuses this year. We figured out how to stay together. That locker room was together even to the end of the game. I said it's an opportunity for us to grow from this, to reestablish, to re-energize, to put our culture back in the place where it needs to be going forward. And a lot of guys in that locker room are going to be part of that. And I'm thankful for that. And I appreciate that they allowed me to coach them. And on a daily basis.
Bar, where are the Nets headed at this point?
I think they have to make some big moves. Of course, they got too many of the same position. They have to get a new identity, and that's hard to do when you have a midseason change of two generational Hall of Fame players. But now they get an opportunity to step back. They're not in the playoffs, so now they get to look at the pending free agents and start getting their board ready and see who they want to try and go after and see who they want to maybe be able to make some trades with. It's potentially going to be some players available, and they have players that are desirable by other teams to kind of get the right pieces around whoever they decide to build around, which I believe is probably going to be Bridges. And you look at, you know, maybe you trade a Steph Curry. A lot of people looking Seth Curry. A lot of people looking for shooters. Patty Mills still under contract. And maybe you can start getting some pieces to fit properly so that you can have a complete team that can contend and get it. They need a big man, because as long as you're going to be playing in that Eastern Conference and you got guys like Williams, you got guys like Embiid, you got Brook Lopez, you need a horse.
Nick Claxton had his best game of the series when Embiid was out. He had a double-double. He's good, but is he big enough? I'm with you on the point guard thing for the Brooklyn Nets, but they're in that reset mode now after trying to go after stars again. But the team, you like them. They're easier to root for, of course. But does that make them any more successful? No, they're not complete. They've got a lot more work to do, and we'll see what they end up doing in this offseason. All right, moving on in audio files. So yesterday, the Golden State Warriors managed to get their series now even at 2-2 after winning both their home games. Remember, they went down 2-0, then Draymond got in trouble. He got suspended for Game 3. They win that game, but they hold on to win Game 4, and they do it despite the fact that now it's a close game, and Steph Curry did something that you wouldn't expect Steph Curry to do, which is called timeout when he was trapped with 42 seconds to go. It was 126-122, right? Like, they felt like they were in control. And then the timeout that he called, he found out, oh, we don't have any left. So that's a tech.
Shaq and the Fool.
And then, of course, madness ensued after De'Aaron Fox hit a three, cut it to one. They held on because Harrison Barnes ended up missing a game-winning three at the buzzer. Here's Curry talking about his mistake.
I knew we challenged, but I didn't realize when we lost the challenge that we didn't have any timeouts left. I know Coach mentioned he took the blame for it. I ain't going to lie. I thought it was the smartest play in the world. When I got the ball, turned around, saw a trap, realized there was no real outlets. Instead of turning it over, It's kind of the heady play, but it turned out not to be. I looked over at the bench and everybody was shaking their head. Unfortunate situation in that respect, but good learning lesson. Thankfully, we came away with the win, but good learning lesson on how important all those details are.
That's got to be a helpless feeling when you look at your bench and everybody's looking at you like, we don't have any timeouts, you idiot.
Yeah, we've seen this before. We've seen this before in football where not the penalty thing, but people don't know the rules for overtime.
Yeah.
Especially early on, and they know it goes in a tie. I thought it was going to double overtime. And, you know, we had a couple blunders early. I mean, listen, that's one out of, you know, probably very few mistakes or mishaps that he's had. You know, but the big thing for me was Draymond and his impact on the game and him not leaving Steph Curry, who De'Aaron Fox, who can shoot over him, yep, was working that left hand and was getting ready to raise up. He left it and he said, listen, if we're going to lose, I'm not going to let their best player have a shot. I'm a force the ball out of his hand to Barnes, who wasn't ready, who's not a great three-point shooter to begin with, and, you know, giving up a lower percentage shot opposed to letting De'Aaron Fox, who's a stud, you know, raise over Steph in the mid-range.
He's the clutch player of the year for a reason, De'Aaron Fox, and that was exactly it. The final play was Draymond staying on the elbow, knowing that Fox wanted to go to that left elbow and pull up. And instead, Draymond stayed there and forced the pass, and then Steph was able to recover just to contest the three by Barnes, who missed it, and that was your ball game. It was a terrific defensive sequence for Draymond Green, but still, for Steph Curry, it was like, saved my bacon, because you know that almost cost them a game. All right, meanwhile, tonight we have the Grizzlies and the Lakers game four. The Lakers are in control of this series, but there's a lot going on. Right, a lot happened. And so the Lakers, they get a 111-101 win on Saturday night in Game 3. And before the game, now remember, Dylan Brooks and LeBron have had a back and forth where Dylan Brooks called them old, right, said all this stuff about him.
Put 40 on me.
You know, right, I don't respect anybody that doesn't put 40 on me, all that stuff. Cameras caught LeBron during warm-ups walking up to Dylan Brooks. And I'm talking, Bart, when I talk about a face-to-face, this is like dad talking to the kid. That's what LeBron was doing here. And even though there's no audio of it, the lip readers tell us that LeBron went up there and basically said, just to let you know, you're causing too many problems. Your crazy ass is doing nothing but fooling around. And he said, he walked back, he goes, you know nothing, you ain't ready for me. Make some shots. Do your job. Walked away. So the game is going on. The second half begins. Dylan Brooks is guarding LeBron. He reaches for the basketball and hits him right in the midsection. You know, right in the...
the gonads.
Yeah, just hits him right in the speed bag. LeBron goes down. He's in a lot of pain. And Dylan Brooks gets a flagrant two, and he's thrown out of the game. Dylan Brooks... afterward, I don't think he spoke afterwards, but when he spoke finally to the media, because he didn't speak after the game, but then he spoke to the media in the off day, and boy, did he go into self-pity mode.
The media making me a villain, the fans making me a villain, and then that just creates a whole different persona on me. So now you think I intended to hit LeBron James in the
ass. Yes.
I'm playing basketball, I'm a basketball player. So if I intended, and that's whatever is in the flagrant two category of having a flagrant two, and you think I did that, that means you think I'm that type of person.
Yes.
That's why I don't rate Mark Taylor at all.
Yes, we do think you that. We think you're a habitual line stepper, and you did it on purpose because y'all getting worked in a series that you thought y'all was going to breeze through because you wanted the old man, you wanted them, and now you got him, and now you ain't ready for all that smoke. And Anthony Davis is somebody that y'all don't have an answer for when he comes motivated. So that's on you. You know, and like all this self-pity, you just playing yourself. Because now you just erase the whole aura that you had about that dude. If you're going to be that dude and you want to be Dennis Rodman, you want to be Ryan Artest, you want to be Draymond Green, you got to be willing to take the smoke. You got to inhale all the smoke. Can't be sitting up there trying to pay a pity party after stuff don't go your way, because now you just look stupid. So now the next time when you trying to be all confident when you getting that ass kicked, now people just going to look at it as you're a front runner.
Here's the thing. I don't think he did it on purpose.
Yeah, he did. I think he was inside hand.
I don't know if he was meaning to do. I think it was him being aggressive.
So LeBron just got an elephant trunk.
Going
just
too
everywhere,
far.
Huh?
Point I'm making is that he was trying to make a play on the ball, and it was an irrational play on the ball. There was no reason to do what he did, but he's aggressive. He's trying to send a message. He's trying to do all that stuff. I'm going to mess with him, all that stuff, right? Because LeBron went up to him and sunned him before the game. So was he saying on something, I'm going to punch him in the, you know, in the cojones? No. But what was he kind of like habitual line stepping with that move? Yes. But the point that I'm going to make is this. For him to say the media is making me out to be the villain, when you are the one who has created this persona, you are the absolute heel. You wanted this role. You created this with saying the things that you say, doing the things that you do, embracing it the way you have. And now all of a sudden it's the media who has created this? This is you. This is the coat that you made. You got to wear it, good or bad. And right now it's bad. And we'll see how they respond tonight. It'll be very interesting to see how Dylan Brooks responds tonight. But LeBron's right. You know what would also help? If you did something basketball-wise in these games, that'd be really helpful for your team.
It's a 12-point high.
And that is Audio Files. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Ray.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
Well, let's go over a couple other things that are going on in the world of sports in New York here. Number one, Saquon Barkley on Friday had some stuff to say as we were waiting to see if he was going to have any reaction. As you remember, Joe Shane was pretty direct and short with his comments about Saquon, right? When he said, like, you know, when was the last time you talked to him? I haven't talked to him in a while. You know, like the real short answers about him.
Have you talked to Dexter Lawrence? Hell yeah,
oh,
man.
We talked to him. Yeah, he was great.
Sexy Dexy, baby. We'll get him done.
So Saquon was in Pennsylvania for some stuff, and a local newspaper there has him quoted as saying, "Where do I stand with the Giants right now? It's like what someone said the other day. It's still April." He said, "I haven't had conversations with Joe," meaning Joe Shane, "too much. So the best way I can handle it is to keep working." I don't know what that means. "Whatever happens, happens. There are things I can't really control right now. All I can control is how I will wake up every morning and stay with my goals and my passion. Even though I may not be with the team right now and not in the building, I don't think anyone with the Giants is concerned about my work ethic, and my teammates aren't worried about how I'm preparing." It's a whole lot of nothing there, right?
Yeah, basically. He knew he was a whole lot of nothing. He's like, "Yo, we in Pennsylvania. I'm out here clearly doing some Penn State stuff. Leave me alone. But y'all just can't help yourself. So guess what? When you need me to do something, don't call me."
Mm-hmm.
Lose my number.
I think he basically was just like letting you know that it's out of my control. But I like the whole thing about all I can do is just keep working. Like come on, man. Like,
well, you just saying keep grinding, keep preparing in the offseason and see
what
you're
ready
for
the season. Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, you knew, like, him not being at minicamp doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. I mean, you know how many times Ray Lewis, Peter Bowyer, man, come on, man. That's typical.
Right.
First of all, guys like that usually don't show up anyway. They usually want to work out with their people that they spend in paying $100,000 plus.
That's a good point.
To train them.
Yeah.
And then they show up for the mandatory stuff, show everybody how good I look, and say bye. Like,
now,
see?
Now Justin Verlander's getting closer, right, to returning, to making his debut, actually, not returning, making his debut at the Mets. So I guess he's got to do a minor league rehab start first and see how he feels, but he's getting closer. That's a good sign. Meanwhile, though, Max Scherzer now has got to serve this 10-game suspension. And if you were watching Sunday Night Baseball, and that's why I love David Cohn. David Cohn's one of my favorite people on baseball. Because A, he's a savant. B, he's done it. You know, he's had a great career. And he's a great storyteller. Like, it's everything you want in an analyst. And so he took rosin, put it on his fingers. Then he cleaned it with the alcohol, like Max Scherzer said, this is the protocol. Then he put the rosin back on his fingers, and he moved his hands together, and then he held the baseball. And when he let go of his – you know when you hold the baseball with two fingers on the top, the thumb on the bottom? He let the thumb drop out. And so two fingers are on top of the baseball. The baseball did not fall. It stuck to his fingers.
But he had Gorilla Glue?
And it was just simply alcohol to clean his fingers and then rosin, mixing it with whatever alcohol was still on his fingers. And it created a sticky enough substance to show why the umpires reacted the way they did. It was fascinating to see it.
But this is the thing. The umpires are acting as if, because the rosin is provided by the MLB, right? So the crazy thing
is. Yeah, it's the rosin bag. Yeah, it was the bag.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're reacting as if they don't think this is possible. Like, bro, you just told me to wipe it off. I came back, and you think I went back and added more?
And that's what Cone was trying to show, is you don't need any banned substances to do this. It wasn't like he was like, you know, you always call it spider tacky, right? The spider tack. Like, you don't need that. You don't need anything other than my dry fingers or maybe some sweat on them, rosin, then alcohol to take the rosin off, and then rosin again, which I'm allowed to use. But and he's saying, look how sticky my fingers can get just using those things that the league allows you to use. I think the point he's making is if you use too much,
but the umpire, first of all, if you can do that with just applying it the proper way, if you do it improperly, you can just pull your fingerprints right off the ball. Like, if it's that sticky, like, come on, man, like, just pull them off like you like Triple X or something. But this is the thing. Like, how does the umps not know that that's possible? Like, have they applied it themselves? It's the stickiest they've ever been. Then what's stickier than that? Not being at, like, throwing a ball in the dirt?
Yeah, the umpires were talking about how they've never seen anything like that.
Like, come on, man. Yeah. David Cone just told you something super sticky right there, and he's doing it in not crazy conditions when he's purposely trying to be extra sticky.
So he's saying the alcohol, like, I guess, activates whatever of the rosin that is still on your fingers, so it makes it sticky.
So maybe they should tell people to wipe off without alcohol. They need to come up with an approved substance that if you have too much on, it takes it off. Like I said, we use Goofball.
Isn't Goofball, isn't that alcohol? Isn't it the same thing?
No. It's got some other active ingredients in it. Anybody out there that paint, tell us what Goof Off is. Because remember, we should have to spray our arms with the glue. And then we put this stuff on, and then sometimes guys play on their arms. We saw that with you know, the old Raiders and stuff like that, with a ball stick. You can run with the football, stick to your forearm, and you ain't got to have your hand on it.
It is pretty amazing, though. But it was good theater, though, for Sunday Night Baseball, just to see the way Coney did that. So, I mean, again, now the Mets have to live without Max Scherzer for a little while.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.